You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, I talk about euthanasia in UK and the recent case there where a 12-year-old girl named Nancy was euthanized. This was a unique case because it was the first time where the courts authorized euthanasia when the patient was not terminally ill nor on life support. For the main topic, I discuss a 72-year-old hunter who becomes stranded in the wilderness in Northern California and some lessons learned. He survived for 19 days. And on Matron and Maiden, they bring you some Thanksgiving decoration ideas from things they have found around the homestead. In today's Worldview segment, I want to talk about the landmark decision in the UK where a mother won the right to end her 12-year-old daughter's life. Previous to this decision, the UK courts required two things in order for euthanasia to take place. One, the patient had to be terminally ill, and two, the patient had to be on life support in order to be eligible. In this case, Nancy, the 12-year-old girl, did not meet either of those standards. They stopped giving Nancy food and water, and after 14 days, she succumbed to starvation and dehydration. There is no doubt that this is a very difficult and heart-wrenching situation. My point here is not to attack Nancy's mother, but to address the greater worldview issue. And that is that this tragic story highlights Western society's abandonment of a biblical basis for thinking. We simply do whatever is right in our own eyes. So this case, for the first time in the British legal system, allowed a child that was breathing on her own, not on life support, not terminal, to be killed by the medical system. And so that is the greater worldview issue. These are very difficult issues to think about from a human perspective. But fortunately, we don't have to think about them from just a human perspective, because according to the absolute standard, which is the Bible, life is a precious gift from God, even if we don't quite understand, say, if someone's born without the ability to speak or even be able to eat on their own. Each person is made in the image of God, and therefore they have inherent worth, inherent value, and inherent dignity. So to say that someone needs the right to die with dignity is actually turning the Word of God upside down. This story should remind us that God is God and man is not. For today's main topic, I want to talk to you about a 72-year-old man who survived 19 days in the wilderness, down to 25 degrees sometimes at night, several nights of snow, and very little food and water, and he triumphed and managed to make it out of there, and that is something to celebrate, and we can look at that and certainly find lots of good things that he did, but there's also a lot of lessons learned here. And so the story that I'm bringing you today actually happened in October of 2013. Well, he initially got lost in September, but he was finally located in October. And I'm taking the CNN article and loosely using it. The title is Lost in the Wilderness, 72-year-old man survives 19 days eating lizards and squirrels. This guy's name was Gene Penaflor. He was separated from his hunting buddy on September 24th. At first, he tried to find his way out on foot, and this all took place in Northern California at the Mendocino National Forest in the nature preserve there. They were hunting. He got disoriented, and he quickly gave up. So what happened was is they were hunting deer. They apparently tried to flank the deer that they were tracking on both sides, and he ended up in a draw, ended up falling and knocking himself unconscious. And he was there for a while. He does not know to this day how long he was unconscious, just that he was, and he finally came to. He was hurting pretty bad, but not, not injured to the point where he couldn't walk or couldn't, do some basic functions, fortunately. And since they had split up at their base camp and they were walking over several ridges and into draws in different valleys, he became disoriented and could not find his way back to the base camp. And so his hunting buddy gave it a little bit of time. He looked for him, and then he called the county sheriff, who sent out a search party approximately a day later. So some, I don't know if it was 12 hours or 24 hours later, but they sent out basically search and rescue that next day, and they were scouting along that mountain range on foot with dogs and in the air for 4 days, and they found no clues leading to Pinafore. So one of the mistakes with hindsight, talking through this with Gene, is that he had walked much further than they had thought. And so he didn't really know where he was at. So this is a common trend in survival situations. They're not remembering where they are. Okay. They're not familiar. They're not situationally aware of where they are. Unfortunately, a hefty storm blew in and they had to suspend the search. And this happens oftentimes in the search and rescue community. Even though individuals on the ground may want to continue to search, that decision has to be made because you end up in a situation where you're now having to rescue the rescuers if somebody doesn't make that kind of a call, and it just has to be done. Here's just a small portion from the article. It says, he still had his hunting rifle, but he told his son that he didn't have the strength to hunt a deer. This is his son quoting now. He told me it was mainly in survival mode. He was trying to save energy, the son said. Instead, Pinafore focused on small game, foraged for algae in a stream, and drank water from a creek. To stay dry, he crouched under a fallen tree, and to keep warm, he made a fire and packed dry leaves and grass around his body. He never stopped trying, and his family did not give up hope. We knew he was out there, said his son. Okay, so he did a lot of things well. He had the means to make a fire. He was able to do it. He was able to stay warm. He knew how to find an improvised shelter. He understood his need for warmth and water. And of course, we know that he was able to find some food. Although if you think about it, he got 3 squirrels and a snake in 19 days. That is not a lot of calories, but he managed to survive. And so the number one takeaway on what he did well was his mental attitude. It was his will to survive. He was able to control his fears, manage his emotions, put his ego in check. Some people may have, continued to try and hunt a deer or something like that, and they might get some kind of idealized survival story in their head, and they're going to kill a deer and they're going to crawl up inside of it and all that. No, he stuck to the basics. He covered himself with leaves to insulate his body, and he stayed warm, and he, I imagine, continued to improve his location. Obviously he did, because he was able to withstand snow and cold, very cold temperatures. So that was great, great on him. And so to expand a little bit on the will to survive and his obvious mindset that certainly helped him through. Usually it's fear that affects a person in these types of situations. And so he didn't let that overcome him. And I like to use the analogy, when we teach kids, if they get lost in the woods, what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to stop and even tell them, and I don't remember exactly all the elements of this program, but it's called the Hug a Tree program, where the first thing they do is they stop and hug a tree. And it's not because the tree is going to help them and calm them, but what it's trying to do is just get them to stop and think and don't panic. Okay. If they can just collect themselves a little bit, they can usually come up with the right answer on something that would be good to do. And a lot of times that's just stay right there. And that's also what Gene did here in this case. He just stayed in place. He did try and walk out, but as soon as he realized that was a futile effort and that he was going to be wasting energy, he stopped and just improved his situation, went into survival mode, went over the basics, and waited for someone to come to him, which was exactly the right call. You know, a lot of times, I don't know if you've ever seen kids in a store, in, let's say, a department store, a clothes shopping store, and you'll see them, they'll lose their parents, small children. And have you ever seen them? They're running around, and they literally go into a panic, and they'll start running. You know, that's the tendency of humans when we get lost. We tend toward panic. And so you have to control that with your mindset. And it's an attitude. It's, okay, I will survive. I just need to stop, slow down here, whatever you need to do. If it's hug a tree or size up the situation, as some acronyms will start with. Some will even say, stop, you know, make a cup of tea. Basically, it's the same thing. It's just stop. Don't panic. Just collect your thoughts. Get a hold of the situation. What that's doing is suppressing fear. And the other thing you need to do is check your ego at the door. If you are overconfident, that can hurt too. Okay, confidence is good, but ego is not. And so even the strongest man in the world can't escape their body's reaction to a stressful situation. It's just wired into us. So we have to control that. We have to be able to suppress all those stressors that come to the surface, the physiological stressors. And some of those are good. And, you know, they give us that ability to fight or flight, you know, whatever the case may be. But we need to do that. So we need to check our ego at the door. You need to have a good mental attitude. And if you get into a stressful, fearful situation, if you can, do what you need to do. Hug the tree, make the cup of tea, size up the situation. Just stop and think through it. Your situation, usually if you had a bird's eye perspective, is not as bad as it may seem or appear to you, because when you're alone in the wilderness, that wave of anxiety is normal. It has a way of messing with your mind, and so we have to be able to control that. And so one of the ways that we can increase our ability to have a good mental attitude is to train. Okay, you should be training. If you spend a lot of time in the wilderness, you should be training. If you're a hunter, you should be training on land navigation, orienteering, your basic survival skills, your rules of three, all these things. You can train, and that will help you. And so in those aspects, Gene was really served well by them. And I don't know how much training he had or how much he did, but he obviously had some training, or he obviously was able to keep his wits about him and to stay warm. And it really seemed like he followed the rules of three. So he had his shelter. He had warmth with fire and, you know, using the insulation with leaves. He had water because he positioned himself near a creek and then he worked on food after that. So he had his priorities of work down. But all those things we celebrate. But one very obvious lesson learned here is that he had no means of navigating. He was totally lost. And if he could have been raised up, you know, 1,000 feet and looked around, he probably would have felt silly, because he was probably either not far from his base camp, not far from a road, and, you know, just having something as simple as a map and compass and a little bit of training would have alleviated 19 days in the wilderness. For a lot of people, that would have meant death, especially when temperatures dropping down to 25 degrees. And I want to share with you an acronym from the U.S. Army's Survival Manual. This has actually stuck with me for a long time, and I've always used this to kind of think through different situations, and, you know, whether it's what if in it or an actual situation. But the applicability here goes very, very far-reaching. So the acronym, again, is SURVIVAL. Size up the situation. So again, just stop. Think. Use all your senses, or undue haste makes waste. So they really tie together. You need to just stop, drink a cup of tea, just think about it and figure out what it is that you want to do. Remember where you are. And again, a lot of people think about this like, well, what do you mean remember where you are? That what that means is situationally, you're situationally aware. So as if you're in the wilderness, whether it's the desert or in a cold weather situation, that you're paying attention. Your situational awareness is high, so that as you're moving along, you at least have some general idea or reference of where you are. A lot of people get into this, where they're just following their GPS and they're not remembering where they are. They're just not even thinking about it. The V is for vanquish fear and panic. So this really gets into that whole mindset. So you need to be able to suppress fear, suppress panic, because those usually do not lead to good decisions. Improvise and improve your situation. Value living. Act like the natives, and then live by your wits. And, or you can think of it as in, learn these basic skills, and then you're going to have to recall them and use them if you're in some type of a survival situation. So, we can apply this survival acronym and take a look at this situation and see some of the things that he did really well. He was able to size up the situation, and he certainly didn't remember where he was at, but he did vanquish fear and panic. He did improve his situation. He obviously valued living. He survived 19 days. And he was able to live by his wits. So he had enough basic skills to get by. Okay, so let's talk about a couple things and how Gene was rescued. It was actually another hunter who ended up hearing Gene call from way down a draw. I'm not sure the distance, but he was calling for help. And a hunter heard him and was able to use his cell phone to call the sheriff's office. Now, the cell phone connection was very spotty, of course, out in the wilderness. So there's a couple of lessons learned here. Well, if Gene would have had a whistle, the most simple item that people are taught to carry out in the wilderness, a basic whistle. If you're injured, you can barely talk, you can still use that whistle effectively to call to somebody quite a distance away. And so that would have certainly helped him. The hunter had his cell phone, and it worked, in certain areas, and that's great. Now, Gene didn't have a cell phone. He should have had a cell phone. Not to say that it would have worked down there in that draw. It probably wouldn't have, but it would be a good idea anyway. If he was, say, lost and he was able to get to some high ground, he might have been able to call and have the search and rescue be able to triangulate his position. As it was, the hunter was able to provide GPS coordinates to the search and rescue crew or to the sheriffs. And that was what ultimately led the search and rescue party to Gene. Now, Gene could have also had his own GPS, device that, he simply could have plugged in Basecamp and walked to it. Okay, that's one way. Now, again, I'm not suggesting rely on that, but if he had that, that certainly would have helped. He could have had a personal locator beacon on him that he could have initiated, especially if he was hurt and was unable to move. And he also could, and I always recommend that you have a topographical map for the area that you're moving in, whether you're hiking or hunting or doing anything out in the wilderness. You should have a topographical map of that area, at the very least a satellite imagery of the area, and a compass. And then what I want to just hit on real quick is two things. One, a basic plan for him and his hunting buddy. And then the second thing would be how he could, once lost, how he could get himself out of that situation. So him and his hunting buddy obviously did not have any kind of plan. They just said, hey, we're going to go after this deer. You go up... up the left, I'll go up the right, and then we'll meet back at base camp. Okay? They could have had a better plan than that. Number one, they shouldn't have split up. Now, I know a lot of hunters do that. They go hunt by themselves. But is that the best idea? What if a hunter hunts by himself, he gets hurt, he can't move? He's in big trouble if he has no way to communicate. Hopefully what he has done is he's told people where he's going specifically. Within a couple hundred meters of where he's going, or at least within a grid square, and he's told them what time he's going to be back. And if he doesn't arrive or call within a certain time, then to send help, either to come or to call for help. Okay, at the very least, if you're by yourself, do that. Tell someone where you're going, what time specifically you're going to be back, and what to do if you don't return within a certain amount of time. But him and his buddy could have either stuck together or they could have had a plan. They could have done a map study together and basically said, okay, here are the major elements of the area we're working in. Okay, we're going to split up and we're going to go up either side of this draw, and I'm going to try and flush the deer to you, or whatever it is that they were doing. They could have had a plan, and their primary plan could have been, let's push all the way forward, and then we're going to push to this, you know, limiting feature, like say a road or something, and then you'll turn east, I'll turn west, and then we'll meet along the road, or, you know, very simple plan like that, if they weren't able to communicate by radio, which they could have easily had GMRS or FRS type radios with one another, which I would certainly recommend, along with cell phones. You can't have enough ways to communicate. And then, of course, a no-com plan. Now, like I said, it could just be, we're going to push all the way forward. You should run into such and such road. If you hit the road, on which you turn east, I'll turn west. We'll meet up in the middle. You know, it, as an alternate, we're going to meet back at base camp. Again, just by talking through this, he may have been more aware of his area, his situation, where he could have maybe remembered where he was at and not got lost. Okay, so that would be the first thing, is to have a better plan, because they didn't have one. And think in primary, secondary, and tertiary. That's how you should be thinking about almost every situation you're in. And it's not a paranoid thing, it's just a planning thing. So a primary, secondary, and a tertiary way to communicate. So maybe the primary is their GMRS radios. The secondaries are going to try cell phones, and then the tertiary is the no-com plan, where they're going to meet on the road. And beyond that, if they can't meet on the road after 2 hours, then meet it back at base camp. Okay. Now, I want to talk about how Gene could have got himself out of that situation. If he had a map and a compass. Say he didn't even have a GPS, or he had a GPS, but it failed. But he was able to have he has a compass, he's got a topographical map. And I'll even give him the fact that he had all that equipment and maybe he got lost and he couldn't point to where he was on the map. Exactly. Okay, he should have had at least an estimate or to be close, to be within a couple hundred meters of where you are on a map is pretty important. But the one thing he could have done is had limiting and catching features. Okay, this is like orienteering 101. If you're going to navigate from point A to point B in the wilderness with a map and compass, you need to have those types of limiting features or catching features. Okay, something that tells you you've gone too far, for example. So maybe it's a road. If you hit a certain road, you've gone too far. You know, we do this all the time. When we give directions to one another, even in an urban environment, you're inviting people over to your house. You say, okay, you're going to go all the way to the high school, and then that's where you're going to take a left on such and such a road. If you hit the tire store, you've gone too far. Okay, it's nothing more than a catching feature. Now, if they would have sat down and done the map study, and I don't think they did, maybe it was overconfidence. Maybe they were somewhat familiar with the area, but they didn't have maps and they didn't do a map study. And therefore, he didn't have any type of catching features. He was lost. But if you would have had that, if it's like, okay, if I go and I finally reach, you know, the major ridge, or the ridge that has a cell tower located on it, or a major stream, you know, that kind of thing, he could have used that to say, okay, I need to stop and really think about what I'm doing here. All right. The other thing is that he could have had an emergency azimuth. You get lost. You didn't find your catching feature. You didn't find your limiting feature. All of that failed. You don't know where you are on the map. Well, both him and his partner could have had an emergency asthma. So you break out that good old-fashioned basic compass, and maybe your emergency azimuth was south, 180. So you're going to head south. And you know no matter where you are in that area, even if you got really turned around, you head south, you're eventually going to hit such and such a road. Whenever you hit such and such a road, you could wait there and hopefully you've picked something that, there would be occasional vehicle traffic or something like that on. Or you know when you do hit it, then you hit it and you travel east and you're going to end up at a certain intersection. And that could even be your tertiary plan if you get lost, where somebody's going to meet you there. Okay, but there's all kinds of things that you can do to prevent this type of catastrophic loss. Fortunately, he lived. All is good. Lots of lessons learned here. I'm sure for his family, everybody who's familiar with this situation, it really hammered home to them on some of the things, but people just don't learn these lessons. These types of lessons crop up over and over and over again. They crop up every day. So make sure that that's not you, that's not your kids, and you're helping out other people in these types of situations. If you got a buddy and you're going to go hunting with your buddy and he invites you last minute, and you better start asking questions. Okay, so where are we going? Do you have maps? And you might find that none of that has been thought about. So then it would be up to you. So that would be one thing that he could have done. He could have, they both of them could have had this emergency plan. And again, that was just sitting down and thinking through it. And I just came up with that off the cuff. And I think if they would have just spent 10 minutes planning, looking at a map, figuring out their situation, I don't think we would be talking about this, because he wouldn't have gotten lost. Fortunately, this story ended well. There was a lot of things that Gene did right. He was certainly capable of the basics. I don't know if he was thinking in the rules of three, but he had those covered. So he had his shelter and he had his water, and he managed to get enough calories in to sustain himself. He was healthy. Even the next day, he was standing in front of cameras and talking about his experience. So good on him for that. I'm glad he was joined up back with his family. But let's take some of these lessons to heart and not make those same mistakes.
Hi, this is Matron
and Maiden.
Journey with us
as we rediscover
the lost arts of womanhood.
So we're coming up on one of our favorite times of the year. Now, my favorite time of the year is Christmas, but Thanksgiving is probably a close second.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
And I think my favorite part about Thanksgiving is all the delicious food we get to make. And that is something we will talk about, is our Thanksgiving menu and what we're going to make.
Very delicious.
But in the meantime, before then, we are going to begin to decorate our home. And we do have family coming. My sister and her kids are going to be joining us for Thanksgiving this year in our home.
Yes.
It'll be really fun. So we will have a total of how many people will be here?
13.
So that's not too many. We've had a lot more. We have friends who have many, many children. And so this Thanksgiving should be fairly...
Relaxed.
Relaxed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so... With decorating, what I've done this year, and it's a little bit different than I guess what we've decided to do every other year, is to not be a consumer.
Yes.
We're not going to buy anything that we need in order to decorate our home to get ready for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to decorate it, and we're going to hopefully make it look beautiful.
Yes.
And festive.
Yep.
And thankful.
Yeah.
All right. So I went through and found a bunch of different ideas. Now, we're very fortunate because obviously we live out in the forest.
Yep. And that's pretty much the same environment that the pilgrims were in, if you think about it.
Yeah, kind of.
Wild turkeys running around everywhere.
True. So we're not going to catch a wild turkey for Thanksgiving, though, because only the breast part is really tender and tasty. The rest is a little tough.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a lot of twigs available, pine cones, leaves, and then, of course, our own stored food. We have a lot of dried beans and grains mm-hmm. and things like that that we're able to use for decorating. And yes. craft paper, mm-hmm. glue.
Yep.
Basics.
Yes.
So we're not going to use anything that's complicated. So we're going to share just a few ideas that we found that we'll begin to do, and we will post photos of each of the projects and give basic instructions on how to go about doing those in your mm-hmm. own home if you're interested.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one I found was a construction paper pumpkin lantern.
Yes.
Kind of a long name.
Mm-hmm.
And you hang it up. But it uses some basic, very basic ingredients. Not ingredients. What is it?
Appliances.
No.
No.
Tools? Essentials? Tools. No. It's basic materials.
Materials.
Uses very basic materials.
Okay. So.
We need.
Construction paper. String. A
hole punch. That's it.
Scissors. Oh, yeah, scissors. So what you do is you cut the construction paper into, how big was it?
I don't know, probably like 1-inch strips.
1-inch strips. And you pile all of them on top of each other, and then you punch a hole at the top, and you punch a hole at the bottom, and you put a string through.
Mm-hmm. And you have to knot it at the bottom so that it doesn't go through.
Yeah.
And you can use tape as well mm-hmm. to keep it from moving.
Yeah.
And then you string it through.
The top. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit hard to explain just over voice. So we'll probably have some pictures, right?
We will have pictures. And you sort of cinch it so that it creates a rainbow.
Yeah. So like a little arch. So it should almost look like a bow.
Yeah.
Kind
like
of
a bow and
like
arrow.
Curvy side and then a straight string and then you knot it so that it doesn't go back straight. Now you knot the string
and leave enough string on the top where you can actually attach
hang,
it to the
yeah.
ceiling
and then just fan the things out and it should make a nice
yeah.
pumpkin shape at
yeah.
least that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, and so we're hoping to do that with kind of a dark orange and maybe
red
so
brown.
Kind of autumn
yeah.
colors
mm-hmm.
to match in with our decorations here in our home.
Yeah.
So that one was a pretty simple idea and something that the children can all participate in because it's not complicated mm-hmm. and it gives them something to do. Okay, and another cute idea that I saw was getting a jar, any kind of glass container, anything extra you have in your home, and layering green lentils, like dried green lentils, then dried kidney beans, and then on top of that, dried corn. And then you put a candle right into the center. So you have these pretty layers of dried beans and grain. And then getting a leaf, or maybe you don't want a leaf, but a leaf on the outside, and tying a twine around it on the outside with a bow. And now you can have a candle, and you can have the leaf, and you can have your different grains and beans. It turned out really, I saw a picture of it. It looked really pretty.
Yeah.
Very colorful. With, again, the appropriate colors that we'd be using for Thanksgiving. I even saw seeds, beans, and grains being glued around a candle to just add texture and color.
Yeah, that actually seems like a really good idea. And something that you can do to ensure that it's a nice line and it's not all just going all over the place is wrap a piece of construction paper around the areas that you don't want to get a certain seed
yeah.
on the area. So then you
now,
do
of course,
that.
We haven't done this.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we haven't done this.
We're
but
planning on
we're
doing
planning.
This.
These are our ideas.
Then you paint it the part that you want the seeds on with glue, and then you can just roll and take the construction paper off. And then you'll have a nice line.
Yeah. And so it would make just almost look like a ribbon that you've wrapped around, and you can make it as wide or narrow.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty excited about this one. I like things like that.
And we've got a lot of candles, so it'll be fun to decorate some of them. Okay, so when people come over, it's nice to let everybody know where you're going to sit.
Yeah.
So you don't have to stand there and say, you sit there,
you sit there.
So you have place cards. And I found two really creative ideas that would, again, allow the children to get involved, and it would give something, a variety of different things on the table.
Yeah.
Okay, so one is actually using a real apple. You can use a red one or you can use a green one, whichever you want. We'll probably use red because it would match better.
And then cut
leaf shape
out of green construction paper and write a name on it.
Yeah.
And then stick a toothpick or anything really to get it attached to the apple. And you just stick it in the apple and then set it on the plate. And it's a little apple with
a leaf that says someone's name.
Yeah.
And so they know they're sitting there. We had that idea for the girls. And then for the guys, since we do have some turkey feathers, we decided to make a Native American headband. Politically correct. So a brown
piece of construction paper.
Just kind of a strip that we would create a small circle. Not one that's going to actually fit on the head.
But just, you know, small little miniature one.
Yeah, maybe 3 or 4 inches in diameter. Enough where it's going to be able to hold whatever size feathers you decide to put in there. We're not going to use the large feathers.
Yeah, no.
That would be silly. But we're going to use the small ones. And then in the front, you would just write the person's name. And so you have this little
headband.
Yes. From the Pilgrims and Indians. Another really awesome idea. First of all, I have to say that I do love the internet. I love even Pinterest and being able to go on and see all the cool things that other people have done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we all know that when you try something from the internet or from Pinterest, it doesn't always turn out
like
the way you thought it would.
Yeah.
We've had some pretty funny things.
Turnouts.
Yeah. But that's okay. I mean, half of it is
the process.
Yeah. It's the project and maybe it doesn't turn out, but that's okay. And again, we're doing all of this for free and we're not investing any money. So
that's true.
It's keeping us busy for an afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next one is using construction paper to cut out maple leaves and then write letters on it that spell out like thankful or Thanksgiving.
Or give thanks.
Yeah, and we've got several options of hanging that. You can put twine if you maybe want to put it in front of your fireplace or maybe in a doorway.
Or even
on a wall. Yeah, and so you would put twine and then take the letters and attach them with clothespins. And that keeps it really simple.
Yeah.
The other thing that I saw was putting it in jars.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have these jars and you can, again, use grains or beans or peas.
Or even dirt.
Yeah, maybe. That might be a little weird. I don't know if I would use dirt. Maybe. Rocks? Maybe rocks.
Yeah, rocks.
Anyway, you put the a little branch that you brought in from outside in each one of these and then use that to attach the leaf to, again, using a clothespin.
Yeah.
And then you could put that as a centerpiece down the middle of your table.
And you can have it double-sided.
Yeah. So that you can read it on either side.
Yep.
Yeah. So we were thinking about doing that. And that I thought that would be really pretty as a centerpiece. And even between the jars, we could put little tea lights and maybe some pretty branches or something that we found outside. Mm-hmm. And then so you could have some candles and things like that.
Yep.
Okay, and the last thing is a project we've kind of done every year, but in a different way. So I know one year we did, we made a turkey, and then everyone used their hands on construction paper and wrote what they were thankful for, and we built the turkey slowly over time.
Yes. Another way of doing that is just have one hand and glue feathers or shapes of feathers on all the fingers and on the thumb, add a little beak to make it look like it's the head.
Yeah.
So we'll have a bunch of turkeys or you can have one big turkey. I personally like the big turkey the best.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that we've done is a tree, but I've never used a real branch.
Mm, yeah.
I've drawn using a big construction paper and or pieces, we've drawn a tree onto a wall, and then we've made leaves.
Which are the shape of a hand, right?
Not always. No, we have done that once, but we also did regular leaves. Yeah. And then we, you know, each day someone would take that leaf and write something that they're thankful for and put it onto the wall.
Yeah.
But this year we're trying to use some natural materials that we can just find around our property. And so one of the things I again saw online was using a large jar and going out and getting as many branches and putting them in the jar, almost like the jar is a trunk. And then these branches are
sticking out and they're a tree without any leaves.
Yeah. And so then you leave the little container of leaves that you've pre-cut. You and the kids have cut out leaves. And you could get as fancy as an oak leaf, which is going to be a lot harder than a regular, you know, just oval, long oval shape leaf. Mm-hmm. Whatever the kids can do. And then each day people would write what they're thankful for and they would attach it to the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, attaching it to the tree, that's something that we...
I think what you could do is... just basically stick the piece of paper on to the branch and then put a piece of tape on the back so that it's touching the paper, then touching the branch.
Right.
Branch, like, then touching the paper again.
Know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we could try that. I don't know that it would stick or not. The other thing we could try and do is if we have a hot, we could keep our hot glue gun near.
Oh, yeah.
And each day we could just hot glue them on there. But if you didn't have that and you had extra clothespins, you could even use clothespins. I think that would look really cute. You could even paint all your clothespins and paint them brown and red and orange. So it could be part of the decoration, which would be fun. I don't have a whole bunch of clothespins. So that's the only thing that I'm worried about. I can't purchase anything. We have a lot of jars. We have a lot of dried beans and things like that. And we've sure got a lot of sticks and pine cones and feathers, but we don't have any clothespins. I have a few.
Yeah, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that is something that we're going to invest in next year as we start drying our clothes on a clothesline.
Oh.
Yeah. So we'll have more then. Anyway, those are some ideas that we're going to be doing. And as we complete these projects and as we start putting them up around our home, we will definitely be posting them on the website. If you decide to do any of these or you have other ideas that you'd like to share with us, we'd love to see your photos of your home and things that you've done to make the Thanksgiving season extra special for your family. So we'll see you next time.
Today's scripture comes from Proverbs 31, starting in verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night, and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her work. Praise her in the gates. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.